Hi, I'm Abra, and you're listening to the podcast for MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. We meet monthly to learn more about the craft of writing. We also have a very active message board at www.meetup.com/MNSPEC. Welcome to Episode 5, Creating Characters. This month, Jay Lawrence and Terry Faust discuss techniques for creating and revealing characters.
All right.
That's a pretty good job with that, Gavin.
Yes.
Welcome, everybody, to our character-building session, maybe even in both senses of the word. Who knows? I'm Jay Lawrence, one of the many, almost countless assistant organizers of MinSpec, here with fellow assistant organizer
Terry Faust. That's me.
And we are doing kind of a two-part tag team character session. I'm going to kick things off with a session I'm calling Beyond the Wanted Poster, and then Terry is going to take over.
Fill in. I have a lot of information about personal preferences and how you can kind of work your character up into a being that's maybe different than you.
Shall we do introductions first?
Yeah, we can go around.
Yeah, let's do
around.
Say what your Myers-Briggs is.
Well, we're going to say, if you know your own personal one, don't do your characters. Right. If you did the exercise, just your own, if you'd like.
I did both, actually, myself and a character. It was kind of fun. I'm Dana Baird, and I write fantasy novels so far. And third one, at some point, will be released this year, hopefully. And my Myers-Briggs was introverted, intuitive thinker, and a little bit of judge over there.
INTJ.
Apparently, which is rare, but it seems like all of them are rare. So, at least that's what I think of it. A rare personality.
I'm Michael Merriam. I'm one of the many, many, many assistant organizers in this group. I have some short stories and have a novel coming out later this year. And I am an INFJ.
My name is Shalira Moon Murphy. I am not an assistant organizer.
Genesis.
My Myers-Briggs is ENFX. Last time I took the Myers-Briggs, I came completely balanced between P and J, which was sort of a weird thing. And I had never seen the X before, but apparently that's. My score was just balanced entirely between those two. Whereas my E was off the charts, so it was E.
I didn't have
yeah.
It's funny because I think my I was my highest rating.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I've got a few short stories published, and, yeah, so I can probably state that I'm not an assistant organizer in this group.
For those that don't know, she is the organizer of this group.
She's the organizer of organizers.
Yes.
I'm Judy Ostert. I'm not an organizer of anything. And
that can be remedied.
Never say that.
Here, drink the Kool-Aid.
Wow. Yeah,
no,
I'm an ENFP.
Andre Girard, INTP. I've been working on young adult novels and one not young adult novel, and trying to find an agent.
I'm Tim Rushford. I've been part of this group for about 7 months now. I don't have anything published. I'm working on a novel. I am INQP as well.
I am Caitlin Keeper. I think I was an ISNF or something.
So I'm Pat Sullivan, probably the only person in the room who didn't actually read the directions carefully. So I only took the test for my two characters, or character, split personality character. So I'll report that eventually. And I've been participating in the group for quite a while, working away on a science fiction novel.
I'm Jill Robson, and
I have to admit, I did my homework in a rush at the last minute last night, so I didn't actually think to take the test for myself, just the characters.
See, we're chasing you.
I sort of remember. I know I'm definitely I and N, and I'm not entirely sure about the rest of them. I'm probably more balanced than the other two. I'm working on a couple of novels, nothing published yet. I've been a member of Men's Spec for a couple of years now, but I don't show up very often. That's about all I've got to say.
Well, we'd like to see more of you.
This is the second time this calendar year, so... Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good.
I'm Mike Schoenberg. I write poetry. I have a couple published poems, and if I send more out, I'll get more published. I didn't take the test for myself, but I've had it in the past.
Okay.
It hasn't changed. INTJ.
Well, this is my first meeting. My name's Kevin Charles.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. Welcome.
Nice to meet you guys. Yeah, I've been hanging out at the loft, and there's not enough sci-fi people there for me.
Yeah. You found the right place.
Yeah.
They're good writers, and I love the feedback.
Yeah.
And my degree's in testing or psycho analysis, so it's really hard for me to take the test because I know so much about it that, well, how do I want it to turn out?
That's good for characters.
Right. Yeah. So I would say I'm an ESTJ, but it could be anything at any given day. I grew up introverted and then became extroverted because my parents are very introverted, so... And I've read in psychology that happens quite a lot. You are a lot like your parents until you leave your parents, and then your genes tend to take over.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a novel, and I haven't had anything published yet, but I'm a tech writer at the university, so I fight my technical and try to not write everything out has been my... hardest, you know, only give them the top of the iceberg type thing.
I'm Abra Staffanavy, and I guess my current project is Circus of Brass and Bone, which you can find online at circusofbrassandbone.com. And I am an ENTJ, which will probably come as no surprise to anyone.
I'm Conrad Zero. I took the actual Myers-Briggs test, the official one in college, and came back as an INTX. With the there was like 51, that 1% was leaning towards a J, so INTJ, I guess. Interesting, all the INTs here.
It is remarkable.
Yeah. I'm Maggie Della Rocca, and I haven't been here for a while, so it's nice to be back. And I write mostly fantasy, a little sci-fi, working on several novels and a lot of short stories under my belt. I took this test years ago from a friend who is certified or whatever it is with this, and I know I'm an I, N, and a J. I can never remember if I'm T or F, so.
That means F.
No,
you can't remember. You can't remember. You're not an analyzer. Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, like I said, I'm Jay Lawrence, and I already kind of introduced myself, but if I remember right from when I took this before, I'm an INTP.
That's great. And this is Jason.
Hi.
And you are Jason.
Do you want to introduce yourself? We're just kind of finishing up with the
role. I'm Jason D. Whitman. I published several short stories. My novel query, which I posted on Jody Meadows' blog, was noticed by an agent who asked me for the entire manuscript and a synopsis. And then she said on her blog that her response times due to her moving would be increased by a factor of 3.
What were they before?
Yeah. 3 weeks.
That's still
less than a year.
Our editors average 2 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'll be banging my head on my keyboard for that duration of time. so.
Yeah, 9 weeks is not bad.
I'm Sarah. What else am I supposed to talk about?
Publish anything?
Not yet.
Tell us what you would like to write.
I've mostly been writing short stories. I am like a submissions editor for Apex magazine, so I do all the sci-fi stories and end up rejecting a lot, unfortunately. I've been working on mostly short stories, but I do some novel stuff when I have time, but I have a young baby, so I don't have a lot of time right now.
Yeah, it's always a time thing.
So, I'm an I know that much.
Let me ask, how many people actually were able to do the exercise?
For their character?
I did it on the website posted.
That's pretty good.
Was the exercise just simply telling you what your character was?
No. But I'll tell you what, I'll cut off, and right now Jay has the floor here.
Okay.
We sort of split this up.
Yes. So, I'm just going to kind of go through a little session that I like to call Beyond the Wanted Poster, because I got kind of frustrated with reading novels where their idea of characterization was to give you, you know, describe their height, eye color, their steely blue gaze and their build. And those seem to be the traits that get mentioned the most when we meet fictional characters, but they're also the ones that tell you the least about the person. So I started looking for a lot of examples of other ways that writers bring out character, and started doing a lot of thinking about how we get past the checklist of physical attributes. And so I'll have some examples to read, but first I'm going to make you do just a little bit of work. Hope people have make something to write with. And conveniently, the back of Terry's handout is blank on paper. I'd like you to think of one of your characters. It can be your protagonist or antagonist or a sidekick. It doesn't really matter, just so it's a character that you think that you know fairly well. And I would like you to imagine that it's laundry day. And take a few minutes and describe what's in your character's laundry basket. Let's have a few people read theirs.
Is it because I made eye contact with you?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's because you said your character wouldn't have a laundry basket. I'm curious.
This is the same character. It's actually a fairly well-developed character, so I thought I'd do a control test on him and see if the Myers-Briggs got him, and it nailed him. He's awesome.
Just tell us who your character is, and then...
My character is named Trevar the Warlord, which a couple of people probably are familiar with from my book. His clothing is hung up in a trunk to avoid wrinkles the moment he takes them off. He expects his servants to clean each item with the utmost care, fearing for their life and limb should they not meet that expectation. His boots are always placed beside each other in the designated spot each night for the servants to polish. And that's as far as I got.
There's a lot of character revealed right there.
Oh, yeah. He's a nurse.
Who else? Hillary?
Mine was another one who... did not have, well, she's not going to be doing the laundry herself. It's going to be sent out in 1836. Oftentimes, if you had any money, it was the worst chore. It was the first chore you hired out to the local washer family or whoever it was who took the clothes. But in the baskets would be, you know, the clothes from three brothers, all ink stained from the printing press, the clothes of three apprentices, work dresses for Agatha and Mrs. Hodgins, her own Sunday best that she wore for copying, also ink-stained, all bagged up to be taken by the washerwoman who was in the Monday clothes.
Nice. Somebody on this side of the room? Okay.
Stab it. This is for the same character that I did the exercise on, so we'll get to know more about her. Her name is Aki Ishimura, and... this isn't her laundry basket, she's just a little girl, but this is what she put into the family laundry. One pair of sneakers, white and pink with decorative laces, black tights, four pairs, black medium-length skirt with small pink polka dots, white medium-length skirt with black piping, white medium-length skirt with pink trim, three short-sleeved cotton shirts, beagle-sized vest, girl-sized vest, sparkly,
Sparky.
Of course.
I like the beagle-sized vest. That tells me a lot that she's got her dog's clothes in there.
Yeah, it makes them their own.
And how about one from over here somewhere? Oh, decisions, Mike.
Okay. The character's called Watcher. Laundry day. Grab the vestments. Time to clean them. Once a month seems to be enough. And this is him speaking. But my shirts and pants, well, they're a different story. The shirts need ultra-shocking every day just to keep them reasonably clean. I've got to get the sauces off the front of those shirts. Unfortunately, they always seem to deposit on, drop onto my beard. Sauces and whiskers, what a mess.
Nice. And kind of the purpose of this exercise is not to suggest that you should start building a character by, you know, by using their laundry basket, but just that little thought experiments like this can bring out aspects of your character that you haven't consciously thought about. It can be, you know, what's in your character's fridge, or if your character collected something, what would it be? Or, you know, what's in your character's bedroom, whatever the case may be. It's just a way of kind of shaking you out of that mode of thinking where it's all about what they physically look like. Next, I just want to read some examples from different works of fiction of things that I think are especially revealing of character that have nothing to do with the wanted poster information. First one, speaking of describing the character's bedroom, is one example I call revealing character through personal spaces. And this particular example is from Barbara Hambly's In the Time of the Dark, and she is describing the apartment of her character, Jill Patterson. It was only a dream. She told herself this, staring out from the fortress of worn sheets and cheap blankets at the convincing familiarity of her own apartment. The Levi's lolling out of the half-closed dresser drawer, Rooster Cogburn glowering down from a poster on the wall, the absent-minded litter of textbooks, tissues, pennies, and dog-eared paperbacks that strewed the threadbare shag of the rug. She thought about the early hour of today's seminar, glanced again at the clock and the lamp, and considered seeking sleep and darkness. But though she was 24 years old and almost a PhD, far too old to be troubled by the fears felt in a dream, she rolled over after a short time and groped wayfaring life in the Middle Ages from the floor beside her bed. So what do we know about Jill from that passage?
She's very smart, very intelligent. Well,
she's not obsessively orderly.
Probably
she likes old questions.
She's 24, PhD candidate. She's sort of overwhelmed also.
And all of those things, I think, tell us a lot more about her as a person than any physical description, because we really get none at all. I mean, we get her age, but which I guess you could consider a physical description. But we get a lot of things that tell us about her personality. So kind of the leading questions for your own characters would be things like, what does your character's home or workspace look like? And what does it say about his standard of living, habits, priorities? How might you reveal this person's personality through it? Does he share his space with any other people or pets? And even if you're in the action of what's seen on screen in your story doesn't take you into that space, you know, taking time to imagine it and describe it might bring out some interesting things about the character. The next one example I've got is what I'm calling revealing character through conflict. And it's from the Dick Francis mystery Reflex, and it's a scene in which his protagonist, Philip, is meeting his estranged grandmother for the first time as she is trying to manipulate him into doing her bidding. "I will leave you £100,000 in my will upon certain conditions," she said. "No, you won't," I said. "I beg your pardon," icy voice, stony look. I said, "No, no money, no conditions."
You haven't heard my proposition. I said nothing. I felt, in fact, the first stirrings of curiosity, but I was definitely not going to let her see it. Since she seemed in no hurry, the silence lengthened. More stock-taking on her part, perhaps. Simple patience on mine. One thing my haphazard upbringing had given me was an almost limitless capacity for waiting. Waiting for people to come who didn't, and for promises to be fulfilled that weren't. Finally, she said, "You're taller than I expected, and tougher." I waited some more. "Where is your mother?" she said. "My mother, her daughter." "Scattered on the winds," I said. "What do you mean?" "I think she's dead." "Think?" She looked more annoyed than anxious. "Don't you know?" She didn't exactly write to me to say she died, no. "Your flippancy is disgraceful." "Your behavior since before my birth," I said, "gives you no right to say so." So what do we know about Philip and grandmother from that short exchange?
Reflex.
She didn't raise him.
Doesn't sound like anybody in that family is particularly close.
Well, she's obviously very proper and upright, and he's obviously a little more laid back. And
was this a novel called Reflex or short story?
Novel. Yeah. And obviously there's a hint that his upbringing was a little odd in some respects.
Unconventional.
Yeah.
Scattered, disorganized.
Mm-hmm. He's very self-possessed. You know, he's not in doubt of himself at all in this.
And yet he's also wanting that family connection that he is pushing away, which is also very interesting to me.
That contradiction. Only on his own terms.
Yeah, but that contradiction that's there. I mean, he's there to hear what she has to say.
Sounds like what's her name, Violet? Vi? It sounds like
Her name actually doesn't appear in this scene.
It
I forget
like
what it is.
In her own uptight way, she wants some I don't know if it's closeness or control. She wants something.
Control.
Yeah, she definitely wants something.
Yeah.
It emerges that she wants him to look for his sister that until this moment he didn't know he had. So, which is kind of a central part of the novel.
She seems to think that she can buy her way into what she wants, and that asking
needs to buy.
Right.
So against
we assume she's wealthy since she's offering to leave him £100,000.
Right. She doesn't want to buy it with the coin of standard coin of family. She wants to buy it with money.
Mm-hmm. Which what means is, there is no value in family. It's only value in money.
Mm-hmm. And there's another.
I place it maybe about a third of the way into his career. It wasn't a really early one, but
who's the author of this?
Dick Francis.
We have another.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that she has all that money and she could easily afford someone to do research on her family for her, and she hasn't. I mean, to have that much money and power and not use it tells a lot about her character. Mm-hmm.
So
could you tell us the time frame? Like, is it 1990 or is it 1890?
Probably the 70s
or okay. So. I mean, Dick Francis wrote over a really long period of time.
Yeah,
30,
about 1970
years, maybe,
up until just a couple of years ago. He just died recently, but
and
his new book just came out.
Yeah. So, I mean, so some kind of leading questions that come out of this example is, what's your character's style of verbal conflict? Is she offensive or defensive? Does she go looking for an argument, or does she try to placate and avoid? And probably some of Terry's personality typing will lead you to know those things about your character if you didn't already. Does she say what she's really thinking? Or is she passive aggressive? Does she hit below the belt? The next couple of examples are what I'm calling revealing character through adversity, which is certainly related to conflict, but doesn't necessarily involve this kind of direct interchange with another person that we saw in the previous scene. In American Gods, Neil Gaiman is describing how his character Shadow adjusted to prison. Shadow had done 3 years in prison. He was big enough and looked don't fuck with me enough that his biggest problem was killing time. So he kept himself in shape and taught himself coin tricks and thought a lot about how much he loved his wife. The best thing, in Shadow's opinion, perhaps the only good thing about being in prison was a feeling of relief. The feeling that he'd plunged as low as he could plunge and he'd hit bottom. He didn't worry that the man was going to get him because the man had got him. He was no longer scared of what tomorrow might bring because yesterday had brought it. So he marked off the days on his Songbirds of North America calendar, which was the only calendar they sold in the prison commissary, and the sun went down and he didn't see it, and the sun came up and he didn't see it. He practiced coin tricks from a book he found in the wasteland of the prison library, and he worked out, and he made lists in his head of what he'd do when he got out of prison. First, he was going to take a bath. So what do we find out about Shadow?
He's dirty.
He values the ability to have a quiet, clean, leisurely moment that's all to himself.
Yeah, we can't assume he's dirty. They have showers.
Yeah, but the showers are scary things in prison, though. Of course, they already said he was scarier looking than most of the others, but still, they're a scary place.
It's only because he was dirty.
Even if you're not scared, I'm sure they're not a pleasant place.
Yes.
No. Not a place you probably want to linger anyway.
But, yeah, prisons tend to be more structured than he's putting on, and he's leading a very unstructured prison life, which doesn't strike me as real. But.
Maybe Gaiman didn't know a lot about prison life. I don't know.
Or maybe he's just finding comfort in the rigid schedule, and he's fitting his life into it. Mm-hmm. And his perception is that it's not, but it is.
Could be. Because I know some people have been in prison, and for some people who basically can't structure their life, they really belong in halfway houses. But they end up in prison because of the non-structure of their life just gets them into trouble.
And I know the character, so I know that, you know, I mean, ultimately he has reached a higher level of acceptance with his life. And that does actually illustrate that, where, you know, when things happen to him, he just says, oh, okay, and then, you know, figures out how to deal with it at that moment. So he gets to prison, he's like, okay, what can I do to kill time? You know, and he gets out of prison and, you know, okay, what can I do to, you know, not die right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, you know, he's not a huge thinker, he's just kind of a acceptor and doer.
Which book is this again?
American Gods.
Oh. Mm-hmm. The next example is, which I put it, which is somewhere between adversity and conflict. I guess both are sort of in play here. Is from Lee Child's novel The Killing Floor, which was the first book to introduce his character of Jack Reacher. And in this excerpt, he is reacting to the police coming for him as he eats breakfast in a town that he has never visited before. Freeze! Police! He screamed. He was screaming as loud as he could, blowing off his tension and trying to scare me. Textbook moves. Plenty of sound and fury to soften the target. I raised my hands. The guy with the revolver started in the door. The guy with the shotgun came closer. Too close. Their first error. If I had to, I might have lunged for the shotgun barrel and forced it up. A blast into the ceiling, perhaps, and an elbow into the policeman's face, and the shotgun could have been mine. The guy with the revolver had narrowed his angle and couldn't risk hitting his partner. It could have ended badly for them. But I just sat there, hands raised. "Out here on the floor!" he yelled. I slid slowly out of the booth and extended my wrists to the officer with the revolver. I wasn't going to lie on the floor. Not for these country boys. Not if they brought along their whole police department with howitzers. So what do we know about Reacher?
He knows how to kill things with a gun.
He knows how to disarm people.
Very experienced in these situations.
He understands police procedure.
And it wasn't worth it to him to kill these, to take out these two cops, which I thought was interesting. It wasn't worth it to him. So he's clearly not expecting this to be that horrible an experience. This is not a life or death thing for him. And they're going to cut, you know, so he's like, okay. But he's taking it on his own terms as well.
I mean, he understands what their procedure is. But we also know he's kind of contemptuous of them as country boys. So
that's
whatever
his egotistical sense of self.
He thinks he's a badder ass than
sense
them.
Of superiority.
Yeah. It certainly conveys a huge potential energy that's sort of lurking there beneath a quiet surface that has this resource to draw on. It can be quite explosive if he chooses.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't sound like that sense of superiority is completely unfounded.
No.
It's not, as it turns out. He's a badass. So the leading questions out of these examples is, how does your character react to trouble or suffering? See, steely-eyed badass, frightened victim, regular Joe who ends up surprising himself with his own resourcefulness. Does he bend, break, start breaking heads? And what can you demonstrate about his personality by throwing him into hot water? This next example is a completely different direction, but it's showing character through the eyes of others. And this is a conversation among characters in Sarah Caldwell's novel, Thus Was Adonis Murdered, which is very British and very funny.
Is that the Hillary?
Yes. Okay. And these characters are discussing their friend Julia, who is not present at the time. The qualifications of a guide are not those of a nursemaid or a guardian of the mentally infirm. The poor fellow will take his eye off her for a moment and she will wander off. What then? She'll ask her way back to her hotel. She will have forgotten the name of her hotel. We have made her write it down on a piece of paper. She will have lost the piece of paper. She will find herself alone in a strange city. She will not know where she is or what she ought to do. The same thing, said Selina, happens in London at least once a fortnight. There was some truth in this. In her native city, Julia was still unable to find her way with confidence from Holborn to Covent Garden. So, clearly, Julia has a very bad sense of direction.
Poor memory. What's the title of the book?
Thus Was Adonis Murdered. And I do have handouts of what I'm reading from that I'll pass out after this, and I'll post it on the board as well. So, how do your characters talk about one another when somebody's not in the room? What do they admire or criticize or find irritating? What's their history with the other characters? We don't know a lot in this scene about what these characters' history is with Julia, except that they pretty much think that if there's any way to get confused, she will be confused.
However, they don't seem to be terribly annoyed by her. It's sort of tolerant amusement.
Yeah, it's kind of fond. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a few minutes left. I'm going to skip over revealing characters through work life, but that will be in the handout that I'm going to pass around. Another one is revealing character through their hobbies and interests, and the example here is from Joe Hill's novel Heart-Shaped Box, and he is describing his death metal rocker character, Judas Coin. Jude had a private collection. He had framed sketches of the Seven Dwarfs on the wall of his studio in between his platinum records. John Wayne Gacy had drawn them while he was in jail and sent them to him. Gacy liked Golden Age Disney almost as much as he liked molesting little kids, almost as much as he liked Jude's albums. Jude had the skull of a peasant who had been trepanned in the 16th century to let the demons out.
He kept a collection of pens jammed into the hole in the center of the cranium. He had a stiff and worn noose that had been used to hang a man in England at the end of the 19th century, Aleister Crowley's childhood chessboard, and a snuff film. Of all the items in Jude's collection, this last was the thing he felt most uncomfortable about possessing. It had come to him by way of a police officer, a man who had worked security at some shows in L.A. The cop had said the video was diseased. He said it with some enthusiasm. Jude had watched it and felt that he was right. It was diseased. It had also, in an indirect way, helped hasten the end of Jude's marriage. Still, he held on to it.
He's obsessed with death.
Death fetish, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not just death, but bizarre death.
But he's also, he's also very lighthearted about it, which is interesting.
Keeping the pens in the skull.
Yeah, the pens in the skull, and the appreciating the irony of the dwarfs. Yes, exactly. Right. It's there is a black humor in his collection, except for the snuff film, which doesn't have that sense of light or whimsy about it.
That's why he's uncomfortable with it.
Right. Yeah, the trepanned peasant, well, you know, it also, people survived those kinds of things. I'm seeing that he's seeing the perky side of gothness.
The absurdity.
Yes. Yes, as is evidenced by his, by the girlfriends he has later, that, you know, in there.
Well, he's acknowledging the curiosity we all have towards that sort of thing, but he embraces it rather than turn away from it, you know.
And it's... It's not 100% clear how much of it is, you know, because is what he feels like is the image that that somebody in his line of work is supposed
sure.
to be
projecting.
And yet, I mean, these are things he keeps in his home. So it does at least suggest that the darkness in his music does extend into his personal life in some ways.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he has a public persona, and then when he's private, he watches romantic comedies.
I have a couple minutes for it to hand off to Terry here, so I'll just my last category, and I'll just read one of the examples, was revealing character through relationships and connections, and I'll just read the shortest of the examples, which is from Sean Stewart's Perfect Circle, and it's a passage about his protagonist, Will Kennedy. In 12 years, I've never missed a Christmas pageant, brownie merit badge ceremony, or a school concert. I planted pumpkins at Megan's daycare. I picked up books at library sales and donated them to her school. I sold raffle tickets to send her to science camp. Josie, my ex, once said, "Will, you've been a great..." She floundered. "The best estranged father I can imagine. Best ex-dad in the Lone Star State." I'm thinking of putting it on a t-shirt. I thought this was an interesting passage, especially in contrast with other things we've learned about the character at this point, which is that he's not only divorced, he's chronically unemployed. He can't, you know, he can't keep his mouth shut at work. And he's otherwise irresponsible in just about every way.
But he's dedicated to his daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of the leading questions there are just, who are the people your character has loved or hated the most? How does he treat them? How successful have those relationships been? And what ways does he act to nurture or damage those relationships? I'm about out of time here, so I'm going to send my little handouts around, and there's also just a couple other exercises and a couple of recommended readings on there. And it's certainly by no means an exhaustive list of ways to demonstrate character, but I'm hoping it'll be some good thought starters.
Thank you. You've been listening to the podcast from MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. This is Episode 5, Creating Characters, Part 1 of 2. For length reasons, this podcast is divided into two parts. Catch you on the flip side.